I feel the accountability is a shared responsibility of everybody. It's not only the one, right? I think the technology, like the technology providers, also should come up with some kind of regulatory frameworks. They should not wait for the government to tell that one. Regulations in such a way that where you are using the model depends on the risk of the model. The scale and the risks are too high with the AI in the regulator industry. Not only the regulator, all the industries, right?
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to the Regulating AI Podcast, your premium platform dedicated to promoting responsible, ethical, and trustworthy AI practices globally. Our goal is to shape the future of AI governance through education, awareness, and policy advocacy, while fostering responsible innovation. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we are thrilled to have Naresh Dulam, a distinguished data, AI, and cloud leader. He's also a global speaker, a podcast guest and a mentor, author, and an AI ambassador. Wow. As Senior Vice President of Software Engineering at JP Morgan Chase, Naresh is renowned for pioneering scalable AI and data solutions, advocating responsible AI innovation, and mentoring tech professionals worldwide. Naresh, welcome to the Regulating AI Podcast.
Thanks, Anjan, for having me here. It's my honor to be here and talking to the community.
Wonderful. Naresh, as we discussed in our prep call, we have a global audience base of people who are policy leaders, civil society leaders, entrepreneurs, and tech experts like you. So we're going to get into some of the issues that are facing AI policy and governance today. But to begin with, Naresh, you've been implementing AI solutions at JP Morgan Chase, which is probably the world leader in financial services, and serving over 1,500 business users. You know, from your frontline experience, what do you see are the most critical regulatory gaps in today's AI landscape?
So I see today's landscape is a bit like a growing cities. You know that in the last few years, the cities like especially the Dallas is growing like exponentially. So the AI is, I see the same trend with the AI. And like the cities are like the AI is growing like without basic infrastructures. Like the cities grows like no street signs, no traffic lights, or kind of no zoning rules. The exploded the AI, so it's growing fast. But the people are moving in, but there is no clear systems in place to manage this safety growth explode of the AI. So we know that these models are getting deployed into the production systems that affect the people's lives. Like in my experience, if I say that like the people who gets the loan, or like which transaction gets escalated fraud alert, right? So in the financial systems, because they have been there here for a long time, they have the very strong regulatory frameworks. But with AI, we are, as of today, we are often relying on the good intentions of the developers and the practitioners or the leadership teams who are building these AIs. From my point of view, I see the three main gaps, especially. So one is the explainability. So most regulations don't require that AI systems, the output is not required to be explainable to the end user. But let's assume that when a model denies someone is the someone's the mortgage loans, or like the flagging a transaction. But I feel like as a person that who is get affected need to know the why he was that transaction or why he was not able to do that one. So that explainability is missing in today's AI. And the other thing is the bias and fairness. So we know that AI systems just can reflect what they learned, right? So they are not think like a humans. So all they can do that, they just magnifying the bias in data. But today, if you're looking at the data, most of the data is biased because there is no controls around, right? And whenever you are using these models to be deployed, most of the times the fairness, the legal requirements to check this data is not there. So that's something is fairness and bias. I see that one. It's like you letting the new car on the road without checking that whether the brakes works in the dry and wet roads. They should be in a different, right? So, and the third one is the accountability. When things were going well, good, but when things go west, let's say the model makes some harmful decision, then we don't have a clear responsible, clear answer for who is responsible for it, whether it's a model or like the developer who developed it or the vendor. I think we need to, the regulation need to create a specific rules around these things to make them, these AI products work in the production or in the real life. So to sum it up, I think we are building the powerful tools, like the models are getting every day better, right? But we need urgently need a clear, a flexible, outcome-focused regulations, not the theoretical regulation. Each regulation that we put should have seen some outcome. So that's something is missing, I feel, in today's AI landscape.
So Naresh, I think you covered a vast amount of points. So if I can just follow up on a few points. You basically said there are three things that concern you about AI, especially from a policy standpoint. One is explainability. Yeah. And explainability is hard. Now you are starting to see some models, Naresh, that are attempting when you look at Anthropic and others. But is it your opinion that there should be some kind of regulatory framework that asks foundation model companies to have some kind of an explainability mechanism in there?
Yeah, so I mean, the few players are coming up because the government is pushing behind for the regulation. Like, it's not the government; it's like the people are pushing more. They wanted, okay, if the decision came, so they wanted to be explained to me. So that's where they are doing that one. But if you see overall, to the lot of extent, I don't see that these models can explain why they are deriving that because of the scale, the data they train, there is no guardrails on the data they train. So it my personal opinion is like it's still there is a gap. But we have the long way to go. If you look at the financial frameworks, right, maybe they started 40, 50 years back, these reporting, all those things, they were not in the state those are supposed to be, right? So they are matured over a period of time. I think over a period of time, these models, the vendors or providers will come up with a more tools that explain to each of the audience, like, If you look at that explainability that you're saying, the Anthropic, it's mostly explainable to the developers, like the most technology. But the explainability should go to the end user who are not aware of this technology or technology terms. So that's where I think still we need to go there.
Just a quick follow-up. And again, as you said, this is also for our listeners. The new models are, you know, focused in on reasoning and inference basis. They kind of walk you through how they are kind of coming to some of these conclusions. Does that help in terms of explainability, or you still think it's a black box that still exists out there?
That is definitely explaining how it was coming to the earlier. If you go back to 1 year back, it was not like that. So we see the progress. I was trying to say that we made a progress a little bit, but we need to be completely explained, like why the each token is predicted in it. After this token, why I predicted this token, that kind of explainability so that anyone can understand is still missing. That's what I felt.
Okay. The second thing that you talked about was bias. That there is a gap in terms of bias and those things. And I've had a lot of guests that we talk about. Some of those guests say it is impossible to have a bias-free system because human beings are biased. If you build AI systems, they are just going to be biased. So my question is to you, Naresh, because our listeners are listening, obviously, and they get impacted by a lot of these decisions. So to tackle this problem, is synthetic data an answer to a problem in some shape or form? And then I'll ask you another question on the issue of bias.
How the synthetic data is coming, it's again coming from another model's understanding, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. I agree with that. We never get to the 100% of the without biased data. So, but I would say that whenever you train this model, at least you should represent the data that is used to train this model of all the groups, not mm-hmm. not only the only one specific group. Because I can give in one example of when I was working for one telecom company a few mm-hmm. years back, we rolled out a system where it can predict the customer chart. Mm-hmm. So, but we found out that one that the model was trained most of the data that's on the urban area people, mm-hmm. not on the rural. We have the people on the rural area. Those are the very loyal customers. Mm-hmm. So we found out that one. So again, we trained that we took that data of the both the groups representing and we trained it. And we have seen the progress a little bit. It was doing the better than the previous version of the model. So mm-hmm. I agree that we still don't we cannot avoid that 100% bias. But what if we can go to the 80 or 90% of the data that we are train this model representing all the groups, then we can avoid, right? Again, we at the end, we need to have this human in the loop to make the final decisions, right? So like, depends on the use case. If the use case is very risky, like it's impacting somebody's lives, then you definitely need to have somebody, even though you fully automated your system with AI, you can put somebody to validate it, run. So what I'm trying to say that we try to do as much as regulations put around the data that was trained to these models. And these model providers also should tell us that which data they have used to train the models. So that's that will help the users or the end users to know that, okay, there could be a possibility of challenges because this model trained on a specific data. It has a bias so that I should be careful whenever I'm taking my final decision using those models. So that's the way I see that one. We can we cannot avoid 100%, but we can reduce the risk of data bias.
So what you're saying to reduce the risk of data bias, Naresh, if I'm understanding you clearly, one is to have a human in the loop. And the second would be what you're saying is for the foundation model companies to tell us where this data is coming from per se. As far as bias is concerned, now, you know, looking at it from a regulatory standpoint, there are existing laws in the books, especially, I mean, I'm talking now United States, but I have a feeling it might be in the EU and other places too, and we'll come to that if you're making a credit decision, whether it is for any kind of a loan or a home or anything like that, it is illegal to discriminate based on, you know, different criteria. Just because you are using AI, and this is what members of Congress and Senate have told me, doesn't give you a pass from following those rules and regulations per se. So that's on the bias front. The third point which you made was a very important point, was accountability. Because we don't have regulations in this country. So I'll pose that question to you, because I posed that question to many legislators, senators, members of Congress, entrepreneurs. Where is the accountability? If somebody uses this system and because of hallucination or anything like that, it gave them some kind of a medical or some kind of an important thing, which led to some serious issues, damages, or bad outcomes. Is the accountability with the model, the foundation builder, or is it with the company that might have built a wrapper around it? Is it with the implementer? Is it with the user? Where is the accountability in this situation?
I feel the accountability is a shared responsibility of everybody. It's not only the one, right? So, I mean, you might have the regulations put around that one, but the system can, the bad actors in the system, they may make sure all the checkboxes will do that one. I feel like the accountability is on everybody else, like the model providers who are building those, training those models, and the people who are building, using those models to implement, give the services to the end users who are in the business of serving them using those models. And also the government also. I feel like it's like everybody should have an responsibility. And so I think the technology, like the technology providers also should come up with some kind of regulatory frameworks. They should not wait for the government to tell that one. They should be proactively build some kind of tools or frameworks to self-assess the risk of the some kind of the bad decisions. So that's something is like an everybody responsibility. I mean, if it is the government is putting the responsibility, if you as an individual, if I don't follow that one, so then we could not go anywhere, right? So I would say that it's a shared responsibility of each individual, starting from the data provider who is generating the data, making sure that he should not give a biased data to the model provider who is training the model, and the people who are using that, making sure that what is the model, how the model was built. And of course, the, when we are serving user model, you always need to have the watch on that, whether it's always like you need to have the visibility into that, whether it's always making the right decision or not. So that's something I feel like.
So you're saying the entire supply chain, so to speak, has a shared responsibility for that.
Shared responsibility.
Okay. Naresh, one of the things that you said was that the responsibility or the accountability should be more outcome-based rather than anything else, right?
Yeah.
Can you explain that to our audience? What do you mean by that?
So outcome-based means, so we put the regulations, right? So there will be regulations will come up, right? But if the regulations are too difficult to implement, so most of the times with the people, the model providers will weigh, if it is a big model provider, like if they have the budget and all, they can do that one. But if it is a small small startups, they could not offer that kind of report, audit report to generate it for the model, right? So what we should do that one is we should build these models in such a way that where you are regulations in such a way that which where you are using the model depends on the risk of the model. Like, let's say if you are using the model for building a system that summarizing the data from a documents or something like that, that should be fine. There should be a tiered regulation. Like the regulations on those kind of models could be a little not restrictive. But if the model, those are making the impact of the life, like the, you are putting the model in the healthcare or education or financial system, right? So the risk of the model is too high. So then you need to have a more stricter rules. So the tiered way of having the regulation is the a better way. So this tiered way will help anybody to implement that one. So the a small startup, he can simply, if the rules are lighter, he can easily implement that one. And also the rules should be, the regulation should not be is like complicated. It should be very simple. The governments or the whoever the regulatory body should provide the frameworks to self-assess the compliance of their product. So these, some of these like simplicity in all of the things that we are bringing help us, all these providers, to implement these regulations, and that will give an outcome. You can clearly see that result of it. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean by outcome.
So in a way, Naresh, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm not, when you look at the EU AI Act, it's based a risk-based act where, you know, you have these different tiers of risk. You know, you have the high risk and the, you know, and you work your way around that. You're kind of alluding to a similar kind of, you know, setup where they talk about things that, you know, obviously, which, you know, like biometrics or facial recognition is an absolute no-no. Or if, when you look at, when you get down to the one with healthcare and other things. So you're saying something of that nature would be more suited to us. So several questions that come in is that, one is that we in the United States do not have any AI regulation. So that's number one. You talked about small businesses and not having lack of complexity. Now, if you're a small business, there are now states in the United States that are actually coming in and saying, I am going to, you know, state Connecticut, California, we're going to have our own AI Act because the federal government doesn't have that.
Yeah.
How can small businesses now have to deal with these different pockets, as well as, you know, the EU AI Act and other countries? You know, if you are a large company, you have large, deep pockets. So what are your thoughts in terms of how do we get around some of these things?
So the simplicity of the regulations will help the everybody to adapt.
Okay.
And you know that I have, because in my experience, I worked with a few startups also in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They were not ready to apply these regulations, even though they know that one, because of the the pocket, like they don't have the resources, right? So I feel like the regulation should be treated as an ethical responsibility of everyone. Like all the players should feel that it's my responsibility to have that my product follow the regulation, even though there is no regulations available in the from the government oversight.
Mm-hmm.
It's individual or organizational culture or philosophy is the way to implement the governance around these, the models they were developing, instead of waiting on somebody to force them to do that one.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that it should be the responsibility of all of these people to do that. In terms of, you know, your work, you are obviously working for one of the largest financial services company in the world. And financial services, Naresh, is a highly regulated industry. For our audience, you know, there are so many rules and regulations already in financial services, whether it's, you know, the Dodd-Frank rule and this and that, etc. Do you think that there is a need in the financial services industry to have some rules and regulations incorporating the evolution of AI now, because it is having a rampant use in financial services? And also, what can other industries learn from the regulatory environment within financial services, Naresh?
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes this working in highly regulated industries frustrates people, but they are there for the good reasons, the regulations. So we know that banks are high security zones, right? So they already have a better frameworks around this reporting and all. So financial regulations already, most of the time, financial regulators ask these questions like, can you explain your decisions? How did you come to that decision? And can you prove your model works for how the model works for you? Or if something happened, can you trace back? It's not the right now. You have to trace back to the few years, like 6 or 7 years of what are the events happens, right? So these are the good questions that financial regulations already have it, and they are helping these regulators to income play and do the job as per the regulations. But this AI is adding a scale to that one. With the AI, earlier maybe underwriter write one underwriter writing in a one day, maybe one application he write. But with this AI, you are doing thousands in a second or in a minute, right? The scale is going up. And earlier, like if there is a, let's say you have some spreadsheet or something that may impact only a specific branch. But with the centralized system, this AI system, the scale is going high. The scale and the risks are too high with the AI in the regulator industry. Not only the regulator, all the industries, right? So what I see that financial regulator need to update their policies, like they need to enforce the model transparency, like risk, asking the model providers to disclose which data they used for the training their models. And also the mandating the bias and added fairness audit checks every quarterly. So every quarterly or yearly. So these models, when they come with that, they need to have the card saying that this model trained on this data and these are the capabilities of it. These are the limitations. That kind of information providing these models will help the regulators to write a clear rules around them. So I see that one, other sectors like the healthcare is highly regulated than the financial, I felt always. The retail and education, these guys can learn from them, because the financial institutes have the regulatory frameworks for the reporting and all. So if we can build those kind of reports for other sectors, in the means like they should be a more generic ones, not an industry specific one. There should be a common ground if we set it up for all these industries. So everybody can benefit from these baselines, and they can use these as a navigation or a compass to come up with more detailed their domain specific regulations or acts. Mm-hmm.
No, so lessons to be learned from financial services and other regulatory environments. You obviously have dealt, and you talk a lot about the whole regulatory framework. When I talk to entrepreneurs who are building AI systems, and then I talk to legislators and policymakers, there is this push and pull versus innovation versus regulation, because the innovators say if you have too much regulation, it will kill innovation. And regulators say unchecked innovation will lead us to where social media is, create a lot of harm along the way. How, I mean, you obviously in your role have to balance internal innovation, you work with startups, etc. How can we do that, threading that needle between innovation and regulation?
Yeah, that's one of the trickiest questions, I say. Mm-hmm. So the innovation and safety, I feel like two kids on a seesaw. Mm-hmm. When one goes up, one goes down, right? So, but I feel like with right design, we can balance them. Mm-hmm. So I'll give an example, because when I have done the modernization of the lot of legacy platforms, mm-hmm. when I was doing the modernization, what we did is like we just not replaced the old system with the new system. We run mm-hmm. we run the parallelly, eh? So and then we evaluated the outcome of the both the systems. Mm-hmm. So that's a one way you can make sure that your innovation will continue on that one, but at the same time you can have the safety of your users or your applications. Mm-hmm. And actually the innovation thrives when the teams are not afraid to experiment, I felt. Mm-hmm. So if you give like the if the rules are very strict, right, it's very difficult for them to experiment, the teams or the peoples to experiment and do innovation, right? So as I said in the previously, so if we have the tired guardrails for each of the use case by use case, then we can give a little flexibility for this innovation to go and also they can come up with the better solutions. And one more thing I saw that one, you we know the sandbox concept, right? If we can provide these like the environment where the controlled environment where these people can experiment with the real-time data, but with the guardrails in place, if something go wrong, they should be able to recover that. That kind of sandbox environment will help the innovation to thrive. I think the tired way of the regulation and the sandbox kind of environment to experiment for the people to try out new things is the way for me to in both the innovation safety go in one hand, in both hands.
No, that I think is a good perspective, tiered innovation, you know, approach as well as sandbox for innovators. And I think the European Union is trying to work on that, especially for financial services. Naresh, the you know, you talked about explainability, you talked about data bias, etc. There is a big open source movement happening in AI. When you look at Llama, you look at Mistral, you look now obviously at DeepSeek and several others. From a policy regulatory standpoint, what are your thoughts in terms of open source versus closed source? And if it is open source, then how is that, you know, what kind of policy implementations can you really do?
I feel that open source are the gift to that, not only the AI community, all the tech community, right? So open source is where the innovation thrives. I'm a big fan of the open source throughout my career. I built a lot of projects around the open source tools. And coming back to the AI, the open source is, again, a big biggest gift. So it's like, I feel like when you take the open source and you implement it, like I compare it like we, if you, let's go, you go to an a shelter and you adopted a puppy, right? When you get it to your home, you train it, right? You will train it how to behave. So these open source is like, I feel like the puppies, those models or whatever the artifact that we are getting it. So in my experience, I worked on these LangChain, Hugging Face models and a lot of open source vector store databases. So what they gave me is that like they helped me to quickly implement speed implementation of the products and flexibility, and also the larger community of the people to help you if something if there is some issue in this open source framework, because everybody is ready to contribute. Right, so these are the some of the advantages I see with the open source, but there is a risk as well with this open source. One is that if you take the model, we don't know the how the model was trained, which data it was used to that one. And we don't know that the model was tested in the regulated environments. And sometimes if they are the open source models are pretty new, it's very difficult to find the documentation and support from the other peoples as well. So these are the some of the challenges I feel like it. But when we come to, when we bring this open source component to an industry, so we need to have the same kind of regulations around these open, we need to apply the regulations on these open source that the way we apply for third party tools. Whenever the regulator industries, they bring the third party, they will go through a security checks, make sure that there is no black holes or any data leak issues there with the tools. So we do that same kind of thing with these open source components when we are bringing into the building the products. I think I feel like the regulation that we are going to see should encourage this open source, but at the same time they should make put a regulations on that. You should document all your open source component that you are releasing to use. Like the transparency in the documentation is very, very important. And it's like a, I feel like we build building blocks. These are the building blocks, right? If one of the building blocks have a hole, then it might entirely impact your whole system, whole structure of your system, right? So that's something we should be very careful when we are bringing them. And other thing with the open source I like is that interoperability. These may these will help us to plug and play the multiple components together to build your overall system. Without the open source, if you go with one vendor, if the that specific vendor has any some issue in their some bias is not undetected in that system, then you the scale of the impact will be more across all the users are using those closed or vendor specific tools, right? So that is something we can avoid with the open source because it's use case specific. You have guardrails around that to make sure it's not impacting your whole system. And also the plug and play kind of functionality. You can, if everybody is following the same standards with the open source, you can easily replace the components of your overall systems without rewriting. That's a huge effort in the industry. Like most of the times I see that one, the legacy systems are very hard to replace, but they are the backbones of the business functionality they are running. From my experience, we try to replace them in one go, but we never succeeded in replacing that one go. So the legacy systems are more vendor specific, but with the open source, you get a flexibility to easily replace the building blocks. So that's something I see that some of the greatest advantages with these open source components.
No, that's true. So what you're saying, Naresh, is you're for open source. Open source makes innovation thrive. It creates efficiency with, you know, building blocks that you can plug and play, etc. But there needs to be some kind of safeguards with documentation and things of that nature that kind of need to happen. Naresh, you also been a mentor to a lot of, people, etc. In your career. Workforce is changing dramatically. And so I'm going to talk about two basic things as far as workforce is concerned. And we are seeing this right now across the board in terms of layoffs in tech companies. Now, they can say it's efficiency, etc., focusing, refocusing, etc., etc. But some of these companies have actually come out and said 25% of their code is now written by AI. Some companies have said even 50% will be, etc. So from a workforce standpoint, you know, I want to understand your thoughts and what would you say to policymakers when you look at some major seismic shifts that are happening in there. And the second question I have is really related to this, but it is related to agentic AI, where you're going to have now people say we're going to hire people to be agent managers or whatever the new buzzword is. So you're going to basically manage 1,000 digital agents, etc. That tells me it'll be 1,000 less workers or at least 100 less workers or whatever it is. Now, what are the policy implications if the agent makes a mistake? Is the manager responsible or where is the from a policy standpoint? So my one question is about what happens from a policy standpoint with this transformation in from workforce in AI, and then what's happening with this whole agent workforce that we are building very, very fast.
Okay. Yeah, I think these are the great questions, Sanjay. I've been over the weekend, I do these mentoring activities. I meet the people, mostly the people across the US as well as from India and some people from the Africa. Mm-hmm. I always remind them that AI won't replace the people, but I say that the way you do your job will change with AI. Mm-hmm. This is one of the example I always give, like when the ATMs came around 90s, right? 90s or 2000s. So they did not remove the bank workers, right? Mm-hmm. All the bank cashiers transformed to an advisors, like what they can do, right? They can give an advice when they are opening. So it changed. The same thing with the AI as well. I feel that AI automates tasks. Even the agents automate the task, but they are not replacing old system. Mm. That's my observation. And that fear is real between the people. People always ask me, will I be replaced? Mm. So I think that's where the regulations or the government should help the people, let the companies to adopt the AI, but mm-hmm. at the same time, they should support the people during that shift. Mm-hmm. What I felt is like government should come up with upskilling and reskilling programs mm-hmm. available to all the roles. Those are mostly impacted by this AI automation. And the other thing is like, the government should assess the impact of this major AI deployment. Like the companies are going to deploy a product, they should evaluate which roles are going to be impacted and what is the other program we can help these people to be upskilled so that they will be available for the next generation of the work. Mm-hmm. And also, I feel this is something incentivized, like if the company holds the people even after automation, bringing their AI, if they incentivize the people and help the people to grow or expand their skills, that's another way I feel like helping the this workforce mm-hmm. with the AI automation. When I was talking to these people, a lot of people, like I always tell them that AI, my motto of this mentoring is like making the learning is democratization or the AI is democratization. Mm-hmm. So that's where I try to talk to the people and explain how they can navigate their careers. If you look at me, I'm not an AI developer from the beginning, AI engineer or leader. I was transitioned through my career from mm-hmm. legacy system to that one. I always give them an example. So the only one way for you to be relevant in the industry with the rapid involvement of technology, advancement of the technology is like keep upskilling, having a dedicated time of your in your day or in a month, have your personal time where you can invest, learn on something that will help your career. So that's something to be people to avoid the fear of AI replacing their jobs. Mm-hmm. And the other question you asked, like the agentic AI, these companies are replacing that. I don't buy in that idea of that with the agents, they are replacing the people. In my close observation, when I was, I spoke with this lot of people you mentioned who are lost their jobs in this process of the AI automation. I see it's more of like an hype than reality. In fact, these what I felt is that most of the times, these organizations did not invest on these people to upskill themselves and mm-hmm. due to the various reasons, and they did not upskill by themselves. So, and with the little bit of the automation helping them, so they definitely don't need 100 people. Maybe they need 10 people to do the same job. So mm-hmm. At the end, in the industry, it's all a balance sheet, right? They have to show what is the outcome, right? So yeah. They have to let the people to go. Mm-hmm. So I don't blame this any of the industries. It's like individually, you know that one. We are the far more intelligent than AI systems. We should be know that one. We should be ready. Mm-hmm.
So, Naresh, what you're saying is reskilling, upskilling is important, and you don't buy that these agents will replace human beings, et cetera. Now, obviously, some of these companies are saying some of these agents are PhD level agents that can do, you know, very high end research, all kinds of other works, et cetera. But obviously, you know, that's a long topic that we could spend a lot of time on, because it's a very important topic. Because, you know, today when someone's coming, going to college or coming out of college, they probably are thinking, what should I be learning? Or if you're coming out of college, did I learn the right thing? Because we are at that pivotal moment. Did I learn the right thing? Because if you're a CS computer science major, is that going to get you a job? Like I said, we don't know. But what we do towards the end, Naresh, is for our audience, we do a quick lightning round questions, just a little fun. These are, you know, one word answers. So are you ready for that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So this is just focus on AI regulation, AI policy. So Naresh, current AI regulation globally, is it adequate or is it insufficient?
Insufficient.
Okay. And today, if you were to look at the biggest AI risk, is it technical or is it social?
Social always.
Okay. From a AI governance priority, and this is for our policymakers who are listening to you, should they focus on innovation or safety?
Safety first.
Okay. And AI regulation, should they be global or national?
It's a global, but everybody represent, interpret them in their own way. So there should be a global, like in a health, environmental regulations we have, right? That's what I think.
Yeah. So finally, Naresh, most important, data or algorithms?
Data.
Data. Data is, as someone says, the new oil or whatever it is. But Naresh, thank you so much for sharing your valuable insights with us today. You know, your perspective on AI development, responsible innovation, you know, regulation in the financial sector, about workforce mentoring, the tiered structure that you lay out, and responsibility for, you know, errors, mistakes, you know, that provides us with critical guidance as we, you know, collectively navigate the complexities of AI. And to our listeners, thank you for joining the Regulating AI podcast, where we continue to explore the pathways to a fair, democratic, and innovative AI-driven future. Don't forget to subscribe for more expert conversations. Until next time, this is Sanjay Puri. Stay curious, stay informed, and stay responsible. Thank you, Naresh. This was fabulous. Really, really enjoyed having you on the podcast.
Thank you, Sanjay.